You know him.
He's unfortunate.
He's Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix.
Podcast Go.
And this is the Crossover NBA Show.
This guy is a freaking joke.
Hey, hey, hey. He's here to break down the league.
Nah, he's inaccurate.
That's probably true.
That's fair.
But make a game of it. Just take a drink every time Mannix says,
I was dead wrong.
See? I'm solving problems. Now here's your host.
These guys are going to run me into the ground.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover NBA Podcast, the first podcast we have recorded in the new world where NBA basketball has, you know, come to a halt along with all the other sports going on in the world. The NBA, just this past week, choosing to suspend its season in the aftermath of a positive coronavirus test for Jazz center Rudy Gobert. In the aftermath of that positive test, we found out that Gobert's teammate, Donovan Mitchell, he tested positive for coronavirus. In the aftermath of that, we learned that Christian Wood, the forward for the Detroit Pistons, he tested positive as well. So three known cases of coronavirus in the NBA, which has grinded the NBA to a halt, the sports world to a halt as well. And there's not a lot of information that we have right now. I'm going to try to get you some more information on how this virus pertains to the NBA. Just a couple of minutes, I'll be joined by Dr. Celine Gounder, who's an expert in infectious diseases. You've probably seen her on CNN in the last couple of weeks. She's a very, very bright person when it comes to this field. And she'll try to enlighten us on everything kind of that has to do with the NBA and the coronavirus. But this is a challenging time. I mean, from a basketball perspective, I don't know where we go from here. I can tell you from talking to a variety of league sources in the last couple of days, there is certainly hope that the NBA season can be salvaged. The NBA certainly is bracing for the possibility of playing in the summertime. That has emerged as the best case scenario, starting the season sometime mid-June, ending the season sometime in August. But nobody really knows at this point. We're sort of in this era of uncertainty when it comes to the NBA, and we don't really know when the league will get started again. We know a little bit about the timeline, right? We know that over the next 8 weeks, we are definitely not going to see NBA basketball. The CDC has declared that no crowds greater than 50 can be convened. That effectively takes all NBA basketball off the table, even if you consider the possibility that they might play in empty arenas. There's no way you can get to under 50 with everything that it goes into the production of an NBA game that's put on television, which is the only reason you'd bring NBA basketball back into the mix. So we are at least at mid-May, and then I guess we're kind of in a wait-and-see period. I know there's a lot of people in the league office that would love to get or at least salvage some form of the regular season. I would imagine when the league does come back, they're going to need to have some form of a mini training camp. You can't just take these athletes who the NBA officially told can go home and away from their home markets. You can't take these athletes and bring them right back into a playoff race. You probably have to have some kind of training camp, short regular season. If nothing else, you can have the teams that are competing for playoff seeding, even the playoffs themselves, start to go at it a little bit towards the very end. So that's something to keep your eye on as well. Now, one thing I am curious about, and I'm going to write a little bit about this, I think, towards the end of the week. In some ways, if the NBA can come back, this is an opportunity, I think, for the league to collect some pretty valuable data. Steve Koonin, who's an executive with the Atlanta Hawks, he has suggested the idea of starting the NBA season around Christmas time. Now, that season starting then would extend the league all the way into June, playoffs in the summertime. And for years, that was kind of viewed as a terrible idea, largely because television networks wouldn't want NBA basketball played deep in the summertime. The thinking being, well, summer months, people don't stay home as much. You're not going to get good ratings. They'll take a hit. And networks clearly don't want to do that. You know, I've talked to a number of different television executives who really don't buy that theory, who think that viewing habits have evolved so much in recent years that you will see people staying home and watching games, that the ratings won't take a hit. So if the NBA comes back and if the ratings don't take a hit, that might be just kind of the push the NBA needs to change their schedule radically, to go full-time Christmas Day start, June finish, playoffs over the summertime? Because there's plenty of arguments for playing playoff games in the summertime, right? There's no competition. All you have is baseball. And regular season baseball, I don't know if many of you have watched regular season baseball. It's pretty fucking boring is what it is. So I think that's a good opportunity for the NBA to seize control of summer months when they're not competing with football, when they're not competing with college basketball, when they're not competing with the NHL. They would have the summer to themselves with baseball serving as the only competition. So I'd be very interested to see if the NBA can come back, if they can, if the data shows that the viewership is up and maybe it opens the door for summer basketball to become a full-time thing. I'm actually all for it on a personal level. I know there's some people out there, and I've talked to many of you, that are not fans of playing basketball in the summer, of being in the gym in the summer. A lot of people want their summer vacation. I get all that. But I think it's pretty cool to have NBA basketball be the only thing on the landscape. And on a personal level, I really don't mind having like September and October off. I'm good with that. I'll go to BC football games if that's what it takes. So I'm good with the idea of starting the season around Christmas. I think it'd be better for ratings. I think it'd be better for everybody involved if that's the way you go. A couple of basketball things. You know, we're not at that point yet, but if the NBA comes back, I'm very curious to see how it affects players, right? You have, say, like the Philadelphia 76ers, for example. The 76ers, who have struggled all season long, it seemed like their entire year was headed down the drain with the injury to Ben Simmons. Joel Embiid's been banged up. What happens if you give that team a month, 2 months off, injuries heal, and they all come back, and maybe the chemistry gets a little bit better with some little time to reflect? Is that a team that could still put it together and make a run? How about in the Western Conference? The Lakers, when this whole thing shut down, they were playing their best basketball of the season. They were coming off wins over the Bucks, over the Clippers. They looked like world beaters when the game came to a stop. Are they able to regain all that momentum? Can LeBron James at 35 years old, here we go, questioning LeBron James again. Can LeBron at 35 years old rev up that engine one more time for a playoff run? I think these are reasonable basketball questions that I'm sure we're going to ask the next couple of months if this coronavirus epidemic slowly starts to recede somewhat. One other thing, specific to the Jazz and to Rudy Gobert and to Donovan Mitchell, I reported on Friday that Mitchell was extremely frustrated with Gobert and with the situation in Utah, feeling, you know, I didn't write this at the time, but, you know, look, if you're Donovan Mitchell, Gobert tests positive. Gobert was, by his own admission, reckless inside that locker room, careless with how he behaved and how he treated the whole notion of the coronavirus. Donovan Mitchell went on Good Morning America, and in response to a question about whether he's talked to Rudy Gobert, he said this.
To be honest with you, Robin, you know, it took a while, you know, for me to kind of cool off, you know, and I read what he said and I heard what he said. So, you know, I'm glad he's doing okay. I'm glad I'm doing well. I'm just really happy, to be honest, Robin, that it's just, you know, I hate to say there's two of us, but like it wasn't the whole party, you know, at the end of the day.
Now, Mitchell didn't say he was upset with Gobert, but I interpreted that as basically confirmation for everything that I wrote about the relationship between the two. And one thing to watch moving forward is, can that relationship be salvaged? These are two key players on one of the better young teams in basketball. Gobert, Mitchell, Joe Ingles. These are good players, the core members of this team. Mike Conley's in that mix. Royce O'Neal, a lot of good players in that Jazz team. They have underachieved this year, dealt with a variety of problems. Mike Conley's chemistry, Mike Conley's injuries, a whole lot of stuff that has to do with Mike Conley. But what bears watching this season and beyond is just how upset Donovan Mitchell is. I mean, he's a great guy. For people that know him, he's a terrific person, terrific teammate. I can certainly see him getting past this, but as you heard him say, he needed some time to kind of cool the jets a little bit and get over some stuff, and that's something that certainly bears watching. For now, though, don't even think about the NBA coming back anytime soon. The NBA is in a holding pattern. The NBA is only going to come back when medical experts tell them it is safe to come back. They're not going to rush this thing back if for no other reason than they would take a huge PR hit if they ultimately tried to. So the NBA is going to be on ice probably until June at the earliest. So hunker down, watch some old highlights, watch some old videos. I saw a lot of players out there on social media talking about how they're watching their old YouTube videos. I'm watching a lot of players right now If you haven't seen the video of Ja Morant doing a self-introduction at his home wearing a full jersey, I recommend going and find it. But these guys are going a little stir-crazy, getting a little hay fever being at home this often. So this is going to go on for the foreseeable future. We're just going to have to get used to life without sports and without NBA basketball. All right, when we come back, my conversation with Dr. Celine Gounder, who is an expert in this field, she'll enlighten us on what this disease means for the NBA, what it means for sports, her reaction to how the NBA and sports leagues handled this whole situation. We talk to Dr. Celine Gounder when we come back. All right, Dr. Celine Gounder is an infectious disease specialist. You can see her on as a CNN contributor, host of the Epidemic Podcast, and she's also become a friend of the SI Podcast Network as we try to navigate all the news coming out about the coronavirus, and she's kind enough to join me on this podcast. Dr. Gounder, thanks for joining me. So I guess first off, I want to get into a lot of basketball-specific stuff, but we're recording this in the wake of the White House holding what I thought was one of the more, I guess, ominous press conferences in recent weeks, where it seemed like everyone, including the president, was taking the coronavirus very seriously. Let me ask you first, what were your takeaways from the press conference?
Well, I think the tone was quite sober, but I think it was right on point. Tony Fauci, as usual, has been able to be very level-headed about how serious the situation is, but at the same time, not inducing panic. And I think that's really important. I think, another important message is that we have not been as proactive as we could have been. We could have moved more quickly, but we still are at this tipping point right now where things could head the direction of South Korea or they could head the direction of Italy. And what we do today, what we did yesterday, what we do tomorrow will really determine the course of that. So I would really caution against being overly cynical and overly pessimistic, because that also leads to resignation and not trying as hard as we should. This is really our last chance, and we really need to be focused on that right now.
So the NBA was the first of the major sports leagues to suspend play based entirely on the fact that they had the first player in the four major sports leagues to test positive in Rudy Gobert. Just watching from afar, what have you made of the NBA's response, and I guess the response of sports leagues in general?
I think in general they've done the right thing. I think that by saying, it's not safe to play even without fans in the stadium is the right thing, not just for their fans, but for their own players and their families. And I think really understanding that we all need to be part of the social distancing thing or it won't work. As long as you have an exception for this and an exception for that, there are too many loopholes. There's too many holes in the system and it's just not going to function.
You mentioned that you used the word proactive early on, and you followed this outbreak from the very beginning. Should sports leagues have been more proactive and, I guess, not waited for a positive test or one of the players to do what they did?
That's hard to say. And I think part of the problem is there's been a vacuum of leadership for others to follow. I don't think this is something that you can expect sports leagues to figure out all on their own. And I think, part of what's happened is they have been looking to others, what are our colleagues doing? What are others in other, fields of business doing? And in the absence of really clear leadership from the top, I think that created some issues.
Donovan Mitchell from the Utah Jazz, he was on Good Morning America this week where he said he feels fine and he always feels fine. I mean, he was ready to play the night the NBA kind of stood still. And Mitchell is a guy who plays a lot of minutes. You can play 6 degrees of separation with Mitchell's team, the Utah Jazz, from teams that they played to playing teams that they played. NBA players, they travel a lot of places. They stay in a lot of hotels. They ride a lot of buses. They eat a lot of restaurants. I know testing is limited, but do you think that all NBA players should be tested, given what we know about the fact that three of them have tested positive?
I think we're really focusing our testing efforts on contacts, so 1 degree of separation away from a case. So somebody who's been directly in contact, not contacts of contacts of contacts. There, I think at that point you're not allocating the few tests that we have available still right now to the right people, and the risk is still fairly low. So sort of like we sort of changed our perspective with the president's own exposure. The original exposures at CPAC were a couple degrees of separation away, did not warrant testing. And then later he was known to have direct contacts. And I'm not sure if that's what spurred the decision, but he was tested at that point, which was the right thing to do. So especially in the absence of symptoms, you really don't want to be testing people, at least at this stage, unless they have a known contact.
There's been some criticism of NBA and NBA players of getting so many tests, right? The Utah Jazz, they got 58 tests in a short period of time. And there's been a lot of stuff on whether it's social media or elsewhere where people saying, how come they got all these tests? Why, you know, why are they first in line? What's your reaction to that?
I do have some concerns. I don't know if you heard the conversation today about access to ventilators and governors speaking with the president about, you know, what's going to be the system for that. And essentially, it sounds like it's something of a free-for-all. I think when you do not, again, provide leadership, when you don't say, okay, here are the criteria, this is how we're going to prioritize these people for these reasons, for, you know, and hopefully those would be scientifically based reasons, then you do end up with these kinds of situations where the highest bidder, the person who can pay the most, you know, is able to get an advantage.
What do you think? I guess from what I understand, the Oklahoma State health officials took the lead on the Jazz testing, and their explanation was we had to find out how many players were infected, and then we basically had to backtrace their movements, them being the first positive test case in Oklahoma City. What do you think of that response?
Well, I mean, the normal thing would be to do contact tracing, but then in terms of how to allocate the tests, you know, to really focus those tests on, again, the direct contacts of the diagnosed cases, that would be the standard of care in this situation.
So I know this is really hard to map out, but the obvious question that NBA fans, sports fans get are, you know, when can they play? When is it going to be safe? I know it's a broad question, but where do you think we're headed in the next 2 months?
I think things, as Dr. Fauci himself has said, will get worse before they get better. And I think a lot depends on all of us as to how we rally and band together and do what we need to do, not just to protect ourselves, but to protect each other. And that's really what will determine when players go back to play, when the economy starts to pick up again. It's really about what we decide to do.
You know, the NBA before the Rudy Gobert test was, you know, leaning towards a situation where they would play in empty arenas, and that was kind of the most favored approach by a lot of the NBA owners. Under what circumstances would you see that as being acceptable?
Well, if you can guarantee that everybody on the team essentially functions as their own quarantine unit, you could say, their social distancing unit. You know, today they were talking about units of 10, which I kind of think of as maybe a family and some extended relatives or, you know, some really close friends, and that no one goes in or out of that bubble, that circle of trust, so to speak. And if you can guarantee that, you know, then I think that would be feasible. The problem is you're going to have people who, I don't know, they're dating somebody new, or they are going out to eat or getting takeout, or the housekeeper who comes into their room to clean, or, you know, there's just, especially with a team that size, there's too many opportunities for there to be a breach in that bubble.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think that we're, you know, when you look at sports leagues like the NBA and the NHL, which are suspending up until this point, I mean, as you look ahead, do you think there's any chance they'll be able to resume seasons?
Yeah, I hesitate to prognosticate on that one because it's, you know, I think some of the decision making is not just going to be about risk of transmission. I think some of it will be about, you know, economic decisions, financial decisions, pressure from fans and so on. And, you know, time will tell. And if that happens, it'll also be interesting to see, you know, how that does play out, how teams decide to control risk and if they do have any further cases, depending on what they do.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that, I mean, from an NBA perspective, like the worst case scenario would probably be you come back after 2.5 months and another player tests positive, which I would assume is, you know, given the way it's trending, is not, wouldn't be a complete shock.
Right. I mean, that's what I would expect would happen. And then that would sort of reinforce that it's too soon.
Do you feel like we're, you know, and again, these are tough questions to answer given what we don't know, but large crowds gathering again. I know at this point we're down to what 50 and even 10 in what the CDC is recommending. But are we even, you know, the 2 months that they recommended under 50, are we an even, how far off are we, do you think, from being able to allow large crowds or feel safe with large crowds again?
Well, I think some of that depends inside versus outside for sure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even outside, if you're close enough that you're having contact with other people directly, if you're within 6 feet of each other, if you're touching things in common, maybe it's the bleachers, maybe it's, you know, water fountain, whatever it is, you know, the bathroom, that still is a risk factor for transmission.
Mm-hmm. The last thing I want to ask you about is, you know, in just a general way, the best advice you would have for people that are listening and what they can do to slow the spread of this virus?
Yeah, I would say keep calm, number one. This is not the end of the world. This is something that is manageable, but we all have to really commit to doing that together. And I think, you know, being forced to stay home with friends and family, well, hopefully it's real, actually just your family, but you know, I think that's not the worst thing to sort of reevaluate in other ways how fortunate we are. And I do recognize that the impact of staying home and so on when I can still work and my husband can still work despite that is a very different one. But I think it's really important to also be looking out for those of us for whom that's harder in every way that we can.
Does it surprise you, kind of given all the information that we have, that we're still seeing large gatherings, whether it's at beaches or even nightclubs in certain places?
It surprises me, and it deeply concerns me, because it's not just, again, about protecting ourselves. It's about protecting all of us. And if you contribute to transmission, even if you don't get really sick, you're still part of that chain and you're still part of that fire that's burning through everybody else. And, you know, that's going to be very harmful.
Yeah. I wonder too, if NBA players could even be an inspiration to some people. I mean, Donovan Mitchell is, you know, I think he said this week that he's ready to play a 7-game basketball series right now. So it kind of shows that, you know, symptoms are certainly not part of contracting this disease.
I think that's a great point. It's a great way to show, you know, their caring for their own fans. You know, whether you're a basketball player or a politician, I think to sort of stand alongside the rest of us who are doing this is really important. And that's a great show of leadership.
Yeah, no question. Dr. Gounder, I really appreciate you taking the time to join me here as we as NBA fans kind of search for answers as everybody's sort of anxious to know what's next in the sports world. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure.